And I've been told that the commute from the kitchen to the family room is real good. There's no traffic, so that's pretty good, actually. But what we try to do is we try to help people who either have someone in their family or know someone, work with someone, are friends with someone who have a mental health issue. We also try to help the person get the treatment that they need, put them in the right direction for their treatment. All this, we do a lot of other things. We run family-to-family classes, which just finished this past Saturday was the last class for, and it won't be, you know, they take off for the summer and they come back in the fall. But it's a 12-week program, and it covers medications, side effects, what to do, what not to do, what to say, what not to say in certain circumstances. And it also gets the person taking the class to feel what it's like to be the person with the illness. We run a support group the third Thursday of every month. This coming Thursday, it will be at 52 East Main Street. It's from 7 to 8:30. And you don't have to be a member of NAMI to take the classes or to, you know, come to the support group. You don't have to register for the support group. You do have to register for the class because they can only have a certain number there. If you have any questions, you can reach out to us at 908-284-0500. That's 908-284-0500. And we don't man the phone 24/7, but we do have a lady who checks it at least twice a day, and we promise we will get back to you as soon as possible. We are very fortunate to have with us today High Focus Center. And we have Kelly McLaughlin. She's got a lot of letters after her name, which I don't know what some of them are, but she's an adult psych coordinator for High Focus, and which is in Branchburg, and they're all over, but this, you guys happen to be from Branchburg. We have John Serrato, who is a family therapist at High Focus, and we have Christian Wisniewski. Did I say it right?
Yeah.
All right. And she has letters after her name, too, but she's an adult psychiatric clinician. You guys might want to get your mics up, and you know, because when I start asking questions, you might want to talk into the mic. So I'd like to, you know, I want to thank you first of all for taking the time to come and be on the show.
Thank you for having us.
And Kelly, how did you get involved in this type of work?
I started undergrad. I was a psychology and education major, and I had an internship with one of my professors during my bachelor's. While I was getting my bachelor's degree, and it was for in a women's prison, and she was providing counseling and educational services and trying to expand those mm-hmm. services, and I was like a research assistant. So just working with her and seeing what she was doing, the difference she was making and things like that really, you know, stuck with me. So I decided I was going to go the sociology route for my master's, but I decided to go the more clinical counseling route.
Okay.
And stayed with that and became a licensed professional counselor. And I have worked for High Focus.
That's the LPC after your name.
LPC.
Okay, yeah. I'm learning the initials.
Okay, what's the NCC?
National Certified Counselor.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. John?
Been in the field now for 30 years, and looking back, when I was stationed in South America, I was in the United States Air Force.
Okay.
And at that time, Florida University was offering courses down there. They had an annex down there. And one of the courses that I took was family systems, which growing up in the Bronx, Brooklyn, and Queens.
I was raised in Brooklyn. 33rd and 3rd Street.
You have a vast, you want to talk about the melting pot, right?
Yeah, right.
I mean, I interacted with a lot of different cultures, a lot of different family values, and became quite interested, hence this is where I am today.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
Okay, Kristen, it's your turn.
Well, originally I just started out as an accounting major, and I took a lot of psychology courses because I wanted to learn more about mental illnesses. People close to me had been diagnosed, so it was really just a way for me to understand more. And then it turned into like a passion for me to really be able to help people and understand more about the clinical, like diagnostic tools and what things are available to help people who are in need.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really where I got started. And I've been with High Focus now for the past 4 years. And
That's great. That's great. How did, well, let me go backtrack a little bit. What exactly is High Focus?
So it's an outpatient facility. It's an intensive, it provides intensive level of care. So it provides intensive outpatient and partial care levels of treatment, which are more intensive than just your regular outpatient therapist you would see once a week, and less intensive than like a hospitalization. So it's the middle ground to kind of help people transition when they're in that need of more than just an outpatient therapist and when they're coming out of an inpatient hospital stay. It started in, I think it was 1989, and it started as just a substance abuse facility, then expanded to incorporating mental health, and now we've expanded further. We have, you know, specialty areas at different sites, dual diagnosis, which is when you're dealing with both mental health and mm-hmm. substance abuse.
Right.
And so the intensive outpatient is 3 times a week. Typically, it can be more, but typically about 3 times a week for 3 hours.
Okay.
And the partial care is 5 days a week. Depending on adult or adolescent, it would be anywhere from 5 to 7 hours. Because for the children, we include their educational component, so their day is a little longer because they're going to be out of school. So that's kind of where, how it started and where it is. We have several facilities. So we have a location in Parsippany. We have a location in Paramus. We have a location in Freehold, Lawrenceville, Cherry Hill, and then our location in Branchburg. So we're kind of all over, and we you can internally move to either location. So if, you know, it works for you to go somewhere that's close to home, but then you need to transfer somewhere because you work closer somewhere else, at some point we can do that as well. We kind of all work together.
Okay. Is one of these the headquarters, or?
We have a headquarters like in Summit, but we're you know, all the sites are kind of their own entity, but we also all work together. So they're all equally have the same kind of like programs and things like that.
You talked about children. What age do you start at?
So we have a middle school track, I believe, in all locations now, and that starts at 10, and that's about 10 to 13. That's newer. We've done that in the last few years because we just saw that there was a need for that age. The adolescent goes from 13 to 18, and then adult goes 18 and up. So
how far up?
As far as it goes.
as long as you're standing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. So.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And what you say there's different levels of care, okay? One of you want to speak to that? What's the different levels of care?
So the partial would be the most intense level. So typically someone who might be struggling or coming out of a hospital, we would probably put in the most intense level, which is the 5 days a week.
Okay.
And that's 5 days a week. It includes 5 groups of therapy. You would also see the psychiatrist weekly for medication management. You'd have an individual session weekly with your therapist. You can have weekly family therapy sessions. And that's all included in addition to the 5 groups of therapy you're getting a day.
Okay.
The only difference for the adolescents, so the 10 to 18 range, if they're still in high school, they're also getting 2 hours of educational services. So that way they're staying, and we coordinate with their school, so that way they're still getting their homework done. They have tutors that are working with them more one-on-one. So they're able to get, because it's one-on-one, they're able to get most of their schoolwork done in that time frame because it's so there's like 2 people working with like 1 teacher.
Okay.
So it's much more individualized that way. So that's the partial, and that's about 2 to 3 weeks of treatment typically. It can be more. It can be 4 weeks. And then the hope is then that you would transition to the IOP, which is 3 hours of therapy a day for 3 days a week. And that can go from anywhere to 6 to 10 weeks, depending on what's needed. We offer daytime or evening. So the adolescents go after school from like 3 to 6, so that way it doesn't interrupt their school day. They're back at school at that point. And then the adults, we have a day one if they aren't working or if they aren't ready to go back to work. We offer it during the day. We also offer it in the evening, so that way if you're working, you can come in the evening.
All right. I know what it means. Would you explain what IOP is?
It's it stands for intensive outpatient.
There you go. Thank you.
And it's
all the acronyms just drive me nuts.
Yeah.
But
sure.
You know,
part of the difference is in the partial care program and the intensive outpatient program is the types of groups that they're getting. So the partial care, you know, there's crisis in all areas of their life typically. So we're giving them different communication skills groups. We're giving them stress and anger management groups and how to develop and sustain healthy relationships, which the IOP group gets those as well, but the partial care just needs a little bit more of that support. So they're getting two process groups
right.
as well so that they can individually give each other some feedback. So the groups are really the big difference
yes,
between
the types.
Different types of treatment between partial and IOP.
Christian, you deal with adults?
Yes, I work in the adult program.
Okay, is that, what, 18 and up? Or?
18 and up.
Okay, I got that right. What do you know?
I'm curious how many people are in the program total.
So it really just depends. Some sites are just, like, larger because of where they are. So, like, our Paramus location would be, you know, much larger because of the population where it is. You know, we're a little more spread out in where we are in Branchburg, like, in proximity and how many people live in the area, I guess. So it really can ebb and flow. We try not to make it where there's more than 12 people in a group, though, at a time. So we will split them up. So that way, at least in a running group, there's not an overwhelming number of people. But we have at any given point probably 60 to 70 patients in between all the programs.
Oh, that doesn't seem really large, I guess, compared to...
Yeah, other facilities, yeah.
Yeah, okay, right.
Christian, you're going to have to speak up a little when you're talking to the mic, okay?
Yeah.
Because I just got a hand wave from that they couldn't hear you. Okay.
Yeah, we've got it as
okay.
loud as it goes. So
now,
just put it a little closer. There. That's
yeah.
Perfect. Thank you.
When you, when you're dealing with adults, all right, how is that different than dealing with kids? I mean, obviously kids are, you know, kids, and you got to do it a little differently, but... You have to speak up.
So part of the difference between working with both populations is with the adults, they have different life experiences, right? So, you know, they're working or, you know, they've been in the hospitals before or they've been in treatment before, whereas some of these kids, they haven't ever had any treatment before. Or
right.
This is their first time in therapy. So a lot of it comes down to the education. And just trying to kind of speak the kids' language. I think part of working with adolescents is you have to run the groups just a little bit differently. You have to give them a little bit of a break because there's a lot of mental work, a lot of emotional work for them as well.
We're going to have to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with High Focus.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design. This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on 100 in Chamber Radio, WHCR-DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@100-chamber.org. Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 40 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisals, sales, and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, RabCoin has been for the industry since 1974. Founder and owner Randy Block has been an expert and an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. We are very privileged to have with us today folks from High Focus Center, Kelly McLaughlin, Christian Wisniewski, and John Serrato. And John, we're going to jump on you now. Yeah. I understand you do family night and speak to families and so on and so forth. Would you explain that?
Sure. High Focus truly believes that the solution is within the family. And you can see when families first come in for their initial assessment, they're emotionally drained, mentally drained, financially drained. Whether it's mental health or substance, it has impacted the families and has taken its toll. So when they come in, they're looking for answers, they're seeking help, they're very desperate. And one of the main things that we love to do on family night is to help the parents and families and spouses begin to develop their own solutions to the problem. We do live in a society where most families look for the quick fix. They look for the magic pill. They look for professionals at times to, you know, step in and help them fix the problem, which disempowers them. On family night, like I stated, we get them to help to tap into their own solutions. One of the things that we tell them, and it's interesting because, you know, sometimes we get chuckles and a reaction. It comes to a point where we ask the families, at what point can you fire all of us and begin to take the reins and learn how, once again, to develop your own solutions to the problem? When crisis hits home, it, you know, it takes its toll in many ways. On family nights, interesting, we mix the adult families, spouses, middle school parents, adolescent parents. We don't focus on the patients. We focus on them, on how they're dealing with crisis in general. Like I said, what roles do they take? Who takes what role? And getting them to learn how to, you know, pretty much align with each other. Most of the middle school and adolescent families, you know, let's face it, adolescents know how to play one parent against the other.
Oh, yeah.
And do a good job with that, right?
I've got 4 kids. I know what you're saying.
So
they're all adult now, but...
Right. And, you know, it's magnified with other issues, whether it's a separated household, intact household.
Right.
Single-parent family household. We get the parents, once again, like I said, to begin to learn how to move forward, how to tap into their own resources. And like I said, we do live in a world where right now, you know, everyone does look for the quick fix. They look for the magic pill, not knowing and not realizing that the families are really the solution. At the end of the day, when the patients graduate the program, High Focus does not go home with them. But the tools that the parents learn and how to tap into their own inner resources will go home with them. And relapse is not just with mental health and substance, but if the systems go back to the way they were functioning prior to that family coming in, it's just going to be a collapse again.
Right.
You know, like I said, a lot of the families have been through multiple programs. They have a lot of subsystems involved with them, whether it's DIFAS, whether it's CMO workers, whether it's probation, whether it's parole, schools, etc. When you have all these subsystems circling the family in the middle, once again, it kind of disempowers that parental authority, because this one's saying how to do it this way, this one's telling the parents how to go this way, and the parents don't know which direction to go. So overall, on family night, we begin once again to have families to develop the solutions to their own problems.
Now, do you find that in some cases families just wash their hands of it and don't want anything to do with it?
When parents rely heavily on professionals, therapists, and agencies, they become accustomed to step back and allow the professionals to fix the problem. Hence, it takes away from the ability for them to take charge within their own family. So yes, sometimes they look at most places, especially residential sites, as the fix-in station. In other words, I'll drop my kid off, take care of it, I'm done, and that's not going to work. They need to be heavily involved in the process. And we do stats, we do these satisfaction surveys and family satisfaction surveys, and it's interesting because the last report, for the majority of the parents who were involved, there was a 96% success rate as opposed to the parents who were not involved.
Mm. Right. So, John, you repeat this family therapy then often, once a week, or how often does that happen?
The weekly family night group, you can look at it as weekly. What they call a multi-family group. Each clinician does individual family work, which, you know, that kind of couples with the family night and being more strength-based. And once again, like I said, to get the families to learn how to get unstuck and begin to move forward. But yes, family therapy, family night is well incorporated into the treatment aspect of the program. In fact, I think it's one of the most important pieces of the program.
The family night that we have that John runs with another clinician is every Wednesday from 6 to 8. And even if, so we've had it where there's a, they come in for an assessment, but they can't get their significant other or their child to start, the family's still welcome to come. So it's open to anyone at any time. You don't necessarily have to have a family member in treatment at High Focus Centers to just come to the family night. So it's, and even after people leave and graduate, we still have parents that still, and significant others that continue to come to that program.
You just say you don't have to register even?
You would have to, you know, in some way, shape, or form, like we'd have to know who you are and you, mm-hmm. when you come in, but no, you don't have to be an actively enrolled patient to be attending the program. Mm-hmm.
You screen the potential clients?
So all of our clients start from an assessment. So we have an intake number, which you would call to set up an assessment. The assessment mm-hmm. takes about 2 hours, and from that we'll recommend which we think you're appropriate for, whether it's our programs, do you need a higher level of care, do you need a lower level of care, whatever the need is. And so that's how that starts. And they take about 2 hours. And you could call the 1-800 number and get an assessment within the next 2 days.
Do you find that your clients are more mental issues, addiction issues, or both?
I would say it's both. I would say it's a mix of both. And then, like I said, we have the dual diagnosis track, which treats both. So I would say I can't put in one number on it. One, there's more or less of one or the other. I'd say it's really mixed.
And when you look at substance, you know, you really look at drugs and alcohol are not the problem. They're a symptom of the problem.
Right. And a lot of times they take the drugs and alcohol to quell the pain that they're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you how many times I've heard that. I used to work one day a week after I retired at the hospital, and I would have to go to 2 Central, which is their lock ward, and talk to the clients there. And one day this young man says to me, can I talk to you after? I said, sure. You know, so we went out the back, a little patio there that's fenced in. And we were talking, and all of a sudden he says, I got to show you something. He pulls his shirt up on both sides. He had cuts from his shoulder to his wrist. There wasn't a piece of skin that wasn't cut and scarred. I'm never at a loss for words. Ask my wife. But I just was shocked. And my mouth dropped. Finally, I said to him, why do you do that? And he says, it takes the pain away. I'd rather feel this pain than the pain that's in my head. And that taught me something, mm-hmm. you know. And it also, you know, it's a shame, but that's how a lot of people do, you know, not realizing that the cuts are going to be there for the rest of his life. And but, you know, it's just – it's sad. Now, what you – the information you provide on family therapy, why is it so important, do you feel?
Because, once again, I do feel that the institution of family – and the family could be any identified person who the patient seems, you know, that's most closest with. But basically, the solution is within the family. I really do believe that. And I believe that families, you know, although there's crisis that hits at home, they do try to instill healthy values, you know, guidelines. They do try to raise their kids in the right and productive manner. Like I said, today's society, you know, we did some research too. There's such a big high spike in separated and divorced households where a lot of times the young adults or the adolescents or even middle school, they get caught in the middle of that type of separation and divorce. And if it's a bitter divorce, parents are not speaking, the kid hears this one parent saying this about the other parent, trying to make heads or tails, who's right, who's wrong. They get, you know, like I said, get caught in the crossfire, and they're hearing information at that age that they shouldn't be listening to or hearing, which kind of parentifies them in the family and puts them on a parent's level. And then when the parents do try to step in and try to instill boundaries, that kid is not going to respond to them because he's been given too much of adult information and he feels that he's on that type of level.
Okay. Christian. Once you get the mic, there you go. You get a new client, right. All right? An adult comes in, and what happens? What's a typical first day there?
So they would meet with their assigned clinician. The clinician would then talk to them about what to expect from the program and what types of groups they're going to be getting into.
Okay.
Then they get introduced to the group, so their peers that they're going to be with. And we all kind of go around and just talk about what am I here for, what are my goals, what are the things that I'm working on in the program so that they can feel comfortable to know that they have peers that are there for similar reasons to them getting support, and it gives them kind of hope to be able to talk about their problems. So the first couple days of treatment, then they meet with the psychiatrist as well. So we work as like a full team. So they doing the individual therapy, the group, and then they're also going to be meeting with the doctor in case they have any medication adjustments that they need to be made.
Okay. So the only individual then is with the psychiatrist. Do either of you speak to them individually at all?
Yeah, their assigned clinician would be doing weekly therapy with them as well as with meeting with the psychiatrist once per week.
Oh, okay. Good to know. So it gives you a chance to get to know them a little better and vice versa and carry over some of the things that you talked about in group.
Yeah, and we try to develop an individualized treatment plan for them. So mm-hmm. What do they need specifically from us as their support and from the group? And then so we have objectives and interventions that we talk about because everyone's treatment is different. They're coming here for all different reasons. And we try to focus specifically on those interventions that we're working on with them, how they're applying it in the program and how they're applying it outside of the program as well.
Are your clients voluntarily coming or are
yes.
they ordered to come?
Some clients are recommended to come maybe through the court system or through maybe a DCPMP involvement. Most people who are in our program, well, all people who are in our program are voluntary. So they can leave the program at any time. They're not forced to be in our treatment program. We provide level of care recommendations. So we decide, you know, this is the type of care that I feel is appropriate for you based on your symptoms and your needs.
So DCBMP, we better explain that acronym real quickly.
So it's what typically most people know as DIFAS.
Got it. Okay. Thought so.
They, but if they get sent to you through the court, that's not
voluntary.
That's not voluntary.
Well, they can leave the program. It's just whatever the court requires from them.
You know.
Yeah, they'll eventually have to try to do that at another time.
I see. And, you know, it's just, well, I know people who I deal with through NAMI, through support groups and stuff, whose son or daughter is ordered to do this, certain things from the court. And if they don't, it's jail time, you know.
Right.
And, you know, so I was just curious if you had any of that and, you know. And, John, go ahead.
Yeah, we're not an arm of the law. Like Kristen says, we are a voluntary program. Now, even if they're court mandated or they go to IDRC, they would stipulate that, you need to complete a program. Now, if the person doesn't complete successfully and decide not to go with our recommendations, what will happen? They will violate, but that will be between them and the court.
And the court, right.
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 We're not an arm of the law.
No, I understand that, but, it's just I a lot of times the court will say go do this or do that or whatever, and they have to do it or they wind up going to jail, so it's I understand it's not you're not an arm of the law. All right, Kelly, you're up. What exactly does an adult psych coordinator do?
So I'm the coordinator for both the adult psychiatric program and the substance abuse program, and there's clinicians within each of those programs. So I supervise the clinicians that are in each of those programs, run the treatment teams. We meet every day for like a treatment team, a smaller treatment team, and once a week for the larger treatment team for both programs to make sure we're going through and talking about every single patient and going through client care. I also, support in supervision. So what do they need as far as supervision needs? And I also just make sure we are looking at documentation, following up with families, patients, things like that that are outside. If we're having a crisis, I'm like the support person and things like that. So kind of coordinating all the care that's needed outside of the groups, because the clinicians are running the groups and doing the individual work, and I'm kind of overseeing it, making sure it's getting done. Do they need support in something? A lot of times if we're making like a higher level of care recommendation, I'll intervene and help and make that transition happen with the family and things like that.
I have a question, if I may, and it's about money. How are these services paid for?
So we accept all commercial insurances, private insurances. Dependent on the plan is what gets covered, so I really can't tell you what that looks like. For some people, 100% is covered. For some people, 50%. It just really depends on the specific plan by the specific insurance company. We don't accept any state insurances like Medicaid or Medicare. We will try to work with families if there's any type of issue. We can do, payment plans and things like that. So that's how that's done. At assessment, that information is given. So they'll know at assessment, like, what this looks like and how can we plan for it.
Okay.
All right. Great. Now, you get a client who comes first time, and they're addicted to either drugs or alcohol. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. And they have a mental health issue. What do you deal with first?
Well, it depends on what's going on at the present moment. So at assessment, we're looking at when's the last time they used, how long have they been clean for, do we need to intervene in some way, shape, or form, like to send them to another level of care? Do they need a detox? Do they need inpatient? Do they need residential? So first we tease out. If they're appropriate for our level of care, we'll put them in our dual diagnosis group. So that will kind of give us an idea that if it's happening together at the same time and really we can't make a determination of one is more than the other, we'll put them in the dual diagnosis. If we really feel strongly that it's really this needs to be addressed now, otherwise this won't get better, we'll do that first, the one or the other. But because we have the dual diagnosis treatment group, we try to utilize that to kind of support that, what's going on.
But you're saying that if they have an alcohol or drug problem, they should be off prior to coming, or are you going to recommend them to someplace else?
There's typically a certain amount of clean time that we would like to see to make sure they're stable. So, again, that's dependent on how often they've been using, for how long, and how much. So if there's intermittent use, that might be different. If it was daily use for years, we're going to be looking at some form of detox first. And we, you know, at assessment, we can set that up. We can get it arranged for people to be picked up at their home that day and things like that. So we'll make sure we're coordinating that if that's what's needed.
What is the trends now in substance abuse? Is it, I don't know, back when I was young, which many, many years ago, you know, we used to go upstate New York to drink because it was, you know, 18 up there and it was, you know, 21 here in Jersey. But that was it. You didn't hear about marijuana. You didn't hear about cocaine. You know, you didn't, you know. What is the trends now for?
I would say it's really mixed as far as what people are using, the usage. I think, you know, there's access and information that's more readily available to people via the internet and social media and things like that. So I think there is just, there's a mix. I think there's probably a lot more research that shows, like, on what ages, maybe more specifically to what they're using at different points in their life. I can't say specific to us that we're seeing a trend one way or the other. As far as trending for treatment, we've been kind of trying to, we've recently redone all of our CD protocols and all of our groups for the substance abuse groups to what's more trending as far as, like, treatment approaches and trying to take more of, like, a holistic approach. So we've been incorporating pet therapy, yoga, meditation, mindfulness groups, and art therapy, and then also trying to incorporate some music too. Right. So trying to those types of things. So the mindfulness approach is incorporating, like, kind of like CBT and DBT based skills into those. So they're having we're providing more coping mechanisms for people to be using to utilize when they're having their cravings and urges and things like that. Using motivational interviewing as a type of treatment modality, and then incorporating 12-step, obviously, but also allowing for other support groups to be acknowledged, like smart recovery and things like that. So kind of trying to meet, and so broadening the type of treatment modalities we're providing to the patients. So that's kind of what we see as, like, trending as being, like, a helpful transition in substance abuse approach treatment.
But what kind of feedback do you get on some of these alternative treatments?
We've been getting really positive feedback. People are really, really liking, I think, some of the mindfulness and the meditation stuff, finding that the coping skills are more helpful. They're finding themselves having more tools to cope, not just with the urges, but just, like, life stressors. So something that might have derailed them in one way, shape, or form, and then they're automatic response would be like, let me go use, or that was how I coped. Now I have these 10 things that I can do right now, even sitting in my car, that can help me get myself to a better emotional state so I can think more clearly and make a better decision about what's going on for me right now.
Right. John, take the mic, John. Do you find that you have occasionally families who the individual with the problem doesn't want anything to do with them?
Oh, yes. It's a couple of things. You know, I talked about before separate and divorce households. And there are times when you have that one parent who's kind of absent from the picture, you know, and the kid either lives with the primary parent, but the other parent has been inconsistent. So they'll have a lot of mixed feelings centered around their relationship with that person.
Right.
On one part, they know they're out there. And on the other part, because of their lack of involvement, they have a lot of anger issues. So, you know, that's typical in a lot of types when parents are not engaged with their kids. So.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes I know with NAMI, and I've been doing it for 20 years, you find a lot of times that the people want to help and they want to do everything and they, you know, and you got to sometimes tell them, you got to back off a little, you know, you got to let the person do some things, you know, it's, you can't cure them, you know, it's, and mental illness, there is no cure, you know, but you can get better and you can do, you know, take meds and, you know, do your thing. The medical, Hunter Medical Center considers my son a success story. You know, he's was a hell of a beginning, but you know, but he's has his own apartment for 7 years in Flemington, and has just celebrated his fourth anniversary working at BJ's, volunteers at the hospital one day a week. So, you know, he takes his meds religiously, thank God. But, you know, he's considered by them a success story. That's not to say that down the road he can't crash, but you enjoy the good days, you know. But
you bring up a good point. You know, in most cases, when the patients leave the program, it's interesting to see and do some outcome studies to find out where are they at 5 years later.
Right.
Where are they at 4 years later? You know, sometimes when patients are involved with multiple programs, you know, after they leave for a while, you know, they have certain tendencies to be able to move on, but you don't really capture that too much.
Right.
Because for the most part, they've moved on.
Right.
You know, they don't want
exactly.
to be reminded
right.
of it. But it's interesting that, you know, I think outcome studies are so important in this field. When I worked at the residential site, it was so interesting because I would get a phone call, right, from a patient who may have been in the program 4 or 5 years ago. Parents would call and say, "Hey, John, how are you doing? Do you remember me?" And, of course, I try to remember them, right?
Yeah.
But after a while, you get to know who, you know, who's calling and so forth. And sometimes the patients that would call after 4 or 5 years, they would say, "You know, John, when I left the program, I did hit some bumps in a row. But after a while, I just kind of got it. I just kind of, you know, got my life in order. My priorities changed. And my way of thinking changed." Because they get more mature. And I'm talking about
right.
adolescent programs.
Right. Right.
They transition into adulthood, and their mindset changes. They become more, you know, they establish more short and long-term goals.
We got to take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a couple minutes.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in that critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
Hello, welcome back to Mental Health Matters, and we are here with three representatives from High Focus Center in Branchburg. Now, before the break, we wanted to, Kristen, you were going to give us an idea about how you help people transition out of the program.
Yeah, so once they've completed our either both of our partial care program and our intensive outpatient program, the next step is to transition into outpatient therapy. So some people require an outpatient therapist. Other people require additional services. So some people need help with links to vocational services. So we have worked with programs like DVR. We've worked with programs like the YES program, and also other referral sources based mm-hmm. on their diagnosis. So some people who are coming to our program for trauma, they might need some Zufall services is a great program around this area. And also we utilize domestic violence shelters or domestic violence resources.
Like Safe House and stuff like that.
Yeah. So depending on the individualized need or the diagnosis of the patient, we also try to set them up with a therapist who specializes in that need. So you might have somebody who needs some assistance with OCD, depression, right. anxiety, and what have you. So we really try to tailor it to mm-hmm. that type of need for each client.
Great. All right, John. I need. Would you explain vaping and why the increases with it with teens?
Back in the day, in most schools, cigarettes were the big issue. Today, vaping is today's cigarettes. What happened was as cigarettes became non-existent almost, they were banning them from bars, from restaurants. The cigarette companies saw this as a major red flag to their marketing strategy. So hence, here came vaping. And, you know, the advertisement is that it's more healthier. It's less addictive. And there was no strong long-term effects due to the impurities that are in cigarettes not being in a vape device. What happened was, as they developed these flavors in the pods, and they called the pods, the cartridges that go into the vape device, and each pod is equivalent to a pack of cigarettes, it caught on to more adolescents. And a lot of policies now in all the schools are that if you get caught vaping in school, it's automatic suspension. They take your device. Sometimes they have the device tested. And at that point, they have to go for a drug screen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with that, a lot of the kids, although they weren't using cannabis in school, now will come up positive for cannabis. Now the schools want them to have an assessment, which they wind up at High Focus at, and that's when we, you know, pretty much recommend a level of care.
Right.
Before I go on to that, they haven't done really true long-term studies on vaping and the effects. But there is a thing called popcorn lungs, which is shortness of breath, severe coughing, and this has to do with the chemical components that flavor the pod, which, you know, which, like it says, can cause a lot of scar tissue within the lungs. So anyway, the adolescents do wind up at High Focus for an assessment, and due to the fact that some of the kids have never had any treatment experience, and not to minimize their use, but the use is not as severe for intensive outpatient level of care. We have an early intervention program called PEAK, which they would come in once a week, and it would be an hour, hour and a half for an individual on a biweekly basis, family sessions. That's usually a six-week period, as long as they meet criteria of no positive screens, consistent attendance, and family involvement. But what we found, it's a great program as far as for an early intervention tool to use, because I would have to say as many as the patients who have entered PEAK, none have returned for a higher level of care.
Now, PEAK is dealing with, besides vaping, is it dealing with anything else? Or
what? Well, cannabis.
Okay. Yeah.
And technically, if there are more severe drugs, we would have to assess that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we would get the coordinators involved to see if we can treat certain drugs that are more severe in that level of care.
Okay.
I know for opioids, that's very difficult. We usually would refer them out, depending on the situation, to detox or inpatient or residential level of care. You know, when they used to look at cannabis and they used to say, well, cannabis is the gateway drug, that's no longer true. Opioid painkillers are the gateway drug to heroin.
Right.
And if you look at this state, Ocean County has the highest overdose rate in the state.
Yeah.
So, I mean, thank God for Narcan and other devices.
Right.
So, in terms of vaping, just to put a bottom line in here, it was heralded as some kind of a safe, wonderful thing, and now you're saying each pod is equal to a pack of cigarettes. And how often do they go through a pod?
Depends on the kid, but you got to understand, when they pull the vape device, they keep on pulling it and pulling it. There's not like, you know, I have one cigarette, put it out, and that's it. They can't really monitor how much. They just continuously use it because, you know, when they inhale it, it's all vape. It's not, you know, smoke with the impurities.
So it's not satisfying in a way?
The nicotine part of it is satisfying. And you got to understand something, too, with adolescents, it's also an image. You know, having a jewel on them is like peer acceptance. It's being a part of. It's fitting in on top of the nicotine issue.
Right. Okay, Kelly, you're up. How would someone get a hold of if they had a client that they wanted to, or a parent or somebody?
So if anyone wants to just call and ask questions, Branchburg, for our facility, our specific location, we have a number at 732-474-7447. They could ask for me if they have any questions. My extension is 7526. To make an intake appointment, if you already know that you want to come and you don't have any other questions you want answered, intake can also answer the questions. But that number is 1-800-877-3628. They'll just ask you a series of questions. They'll get you signed up for an assessment at the location that fits best to your needs, where you are, and in the program that you're looking for.
So we want to repeat those numbers, please. Mm-hmm. Just
so the intake number is 1-800-877-3628. Mm-hmm. Branchburg's phone number is 732-474-7447.
You have a website?
HighFocusCenters.com. It gives all the information. You can actually, there's a link on it that says, like, get help now, and they'll give you right to the intake, and you can kind of, you can coordinate an intake via, like, email back and forth. You don't actually have to call, but that has the information of all our sites, the services we offer, the insurances we take. Where's Facebook? We're on Facebook too at High Focus Centers. If you just search that in Facebook, that's there as well. But the website is pretty informative of what we offer. So if you have further questions, you could look there first too.
Well, I can't thank you folks enough for coming.
Thank you for having us.
All of you, Kelly, Kristen, John, I really appreciate it. And down the road, we will have you back.
Yes.
Definitely, you know, because, you know, things change and things happen and, you know, organizations get bigger or whatever. And it's always nice to try to keep up and get the word out about what you do and who you help and, you know, everything. So that's really great. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Remember, we'll be here same time, same station next week. And don't forget to look on our Mental Health Matters Facebook page, and you can see the streaming of the show. And we'll be back again next week. And remember, folks, mental health really does matter. See you next week.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web, at www.hunterdenhealthcare.org.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Wendy King.
Notre Dame is on fire. Flames are pouring from the roof of the historic structure in Paris. The BBC's Hugh Schofield is there.
The south-facing roof on the transept is completely consumed in flame. And I'm standing 100 or 200 meters away from it on the road. We're being moved away by the police, and I can feel the heat of it here.
Local firefighters suspect the blaze is linked to renovations that were underway. President Trump says the fire is horrible to watch. Congress and the public will get a chance to see the redacted Mueller report on Thursday. The White House is planning its response to the report by issuing a statement after it's released. Also, top aides will hold a press conference. House Democrats say they want to see the report without the redactions, saying they want to come to their own conclusions. This is USA Radio News.
The great thing about facts, they're proven. Like the fact that crude oil contains impurities. Or that base oil made from natural gas is 99.5% free of impurities. And the fact that Pennzoil is the first synthetic motor oil made from natural gas, not crude oil. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil. Based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30. Available on Amazon.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Officials say at least four Americans have died in a terrorist attack on Christian churches in Sri Lanka on Easter Sunday. John Miller is a New York City Police Department's Deputy Commissioner of Counterintelligence and Terrorism. He tells CBS This Morning.
What you're looking at is the kind of operation that would take a great deal of organization, a good deal of funding, and more importantly, a fairly large number of people for your average terrorist plot, which increases operational security. How do they run this for so long with so much planning and so many wheels turning without it being found? Exactly, Gail.
President Trump says Herman Cain has asked him not to be nominated for a seat on the Federal Reserve Board. Jenna Bush Hager is pregnant with her third child.
USA Radio News.
The announcement on the
Today
Show today.
We all sat there just waited out on our cell phones until we heard it was going to be a little safer to get outside. I went out, I talked to an officer, and he said, you know, it's a little contained right now, so we got some guys out.
A witness to this morning's shooting in Orlando, Florida, as a disgruntled former co-worker went into his former employer, killing five people before turning the gun on himself. From
police
natural
addressed
gas,
the media
not
to dispel some reports that the gunman had used a knife to stab co-workers before shooting himself.
The proof
There's
is in
no
the pencil.
Indication that he used a knife
Based on Sequence
4A
wear test using SAE 5W30.
Available on Amazon.
The tradition. The suspense. The race. Here's your chance to experience the Kentucky Derby firsthand. Rocket Mortgage is giving away 20 VIP trips to Churchill Downs to witness the Kentucky Derby. And one lucky winner will receive $250,000 toward a new home or pay off their mortgage. Enter today at homestretchsweepstakes.com.
No purchase necessary. 21 years or older. Ends on April 7, 2019. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.
Hi, we're live in the studio. This is your host, Georgine Trinkle, and I'm not sure if the news got disrupted there, so I'm going to play our news, and then we'll be right back in the studio.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Officials say at least four Americans have died in a terrorist attack on Christian churches in Sri Lanka on Easter Sunday. John Miller is a New York City Police Department's Deputy Commissioner of Counterintelligence and Terrorism. He tells CBS This Morning.
What you're looking at is the kind of operation that would take a great deal of organization, a good deal of funding, and more importantly, a fairly large number of people for your average terrorist plot, which increases operational security. How do they run this for so long with so much planning and so many wheels turning?